You're listening to an episode of the Life Equals Choices, Choices Equal Life podcast with your host, Kim Oliver.
This is Kim, and welcome to the 199th episode of Life Equals Choices, Choices Equal Life. If you like today's episode, be sure to leave me a review wherever you listen to your podcasts and share with your friends on social media. Just don't forget to tag me at Oliver International. Today, we'll be shifting our conversation from leadership to DEIB. For those who don't know, diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging with Nona Lee, a woman I've been trying to get on the show for a couple of years now and was finally successful. Nona Lee grew up loving sports. She medaled in the Junior Olympics for swimming and later played basketball at Pepperdine University, where she got a bachelor's degree in broadcasting. Then in law school, Lee obtained her Juris Doctor, graduated summa cum laude, and was awarded Graduate of the Year. Nona has also received certifications in leadership for corporate counsel from Harvard University, as well as diversity, equity, and inclusion certification from Cornell University. Lee dreamed of one day combining her practice as an attorney with her passion for sports. So she worked to become the first ever Associate General Counsel for the Phoenix Suns professional basketball team. Lee later founded the Phoenix Women's Sports Association as a platform for helping girls and women find their power through sports. Later, Lee went on to start the legal department for the Arizona Diamondbacks, where she became the first VP and General Counsel for the team. At the time, she was only one of three women to hold this position with Major League Baseball clubs. At the time she left the Diamondbacks in 2022, she was the only openly gay and only Black woman to hold an executive vice president position in all 30 Major League Baseball clubs. Lee encountered countless acts of racism and discrimination while growing up in Los Angeles, during college, throughout law school, in her workplaces, and still today, being an openly gay Black woman. Lee knew it was time to speak her truth and work to empower organizations and their leaders with diversity, equity, and inclusion knowledge and strategies to lead organizations through transformative change. So she founded Truth DEI Consulting, where she consults corporations around the country on diversity, equity, and inclusion for lasting change. Lee is also the co-founder of Truth Retreats, a civil rights tour combined with diversity, equity, inclusion, and justice education, providing a transformative truth and reconciliation experience in Montgomery and Selma, Alabama. Wow. Truth Retreats is the only company that provides a civil rights trail tour along with the DEI tools needed to process your experience and develop a strategy for what you can do next in your community and workplace. Lee has served on many boards, including Board of Advisors for the National Sports Law Institute at Marquette University Law School, Advisory Board for the Arizona State University Sports Law and Business Program, Trustee Emeritus for the Women's Sports Foundation, past president and board member of the DEI Committee for the Sports Lawyers Association, being the second woman in 40-plus year history to serve as president, and first woman of color and first openly gay person to serve. Board member and co-chair of the DEI Committee for the National LGBTQ+ Bar Association, and a panelist on the NCAA's Independent Accountability Resolution Panel, hearing NCAA infraction cases. Lee is a highly sought-after DEI consultant and keynote speaker, working with organizations such as Disney, Fresh Start, Alliance of Arizona Nonprofits, JAMS, Major Lindsay Africa, and more. Lee's mission in life is to create meaningful, lasting change in the world through diversity, equity, and inclusion education. Wow. This is the first time I've read her bio, folks. I'm duly impressed. I am humbled by the intersectionality that she brings to this conversation and the fact that she said yes to be on my podcast. So thank you so much for joining us today, Nona.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited and honored to be here. And thank you for getting through that very lengthy, a very lengthy bio. I appreciate you sharing so much of it.
Well, it must really help my listeners understand why it took so long to get you here. You're a busy woman. You're not just twiddling your thumbs. You're doing some really important, pertinent work, particularly in our current political climate. I cannot tell you how thrilled I am to run into someone who's doing this work in the climate that we're in, because it's not just sometimes unpopular, it can be downright dangerous. So I'm really amazed at the work that you're doing and want to support you any way that I can.
I appreciate that, Kim. And I will say that I am truly one of many practitioners out here fighting the good fight and trying to help others fight the good fight. You know, it is a critical time. And yes, although it's risky in many ways right now, it is so important, as DEI is under attack in a way that it hasn't been for decades, really. And you know, with everything being rolled back, either through the Supreme Court or through Congress or state legislatures, it's so important that we really stay the course and stand in there and do everything we can to protect the progress that's been made over the last decades. And, you know, especially when there's so much more progress still to be made.
Yes, 100% with you on that. Mm-hmm. Maybe we could start by sharing a little bit about your childhood and when you first knew that you weren't like everybody else.
You know, I was thinking about this then. I don't really remember ever feeling like I was like everyone else, if that makes sense. I've always felt, I think, a little bit like a fish out of water. Even growing up in my house, I just felt like I just was different and had different perspectives and views from everyone else, but knew that I was loved and that I belonged there. But, you know, I had a sense that I was different, but different in terms of my sexuality in particular. That really first came up probably when I was about 6 or 7 years old in school. And I didn't really understand entirely what it was at the time, but I had this crush on Sister Angela. Yeah. And I thought, what is that? I didn't really understand it, but it was impactful for me.
Yeah, that underscores for many who think that children are making decisions about transitioning. And the people who are in opposition say, how could they possibly know as a teenager? And it's something that you generally know at quite an early age. That's important because the time that children are suffering, being forced to live a life that isn't the life that they would choose, takes a very serious toll on mental health. So thank you for sharing that. That's a really important piece.
Yeah, it's really important because I think what people don't understand is that everybody likes to think it's orientation, that it's a choice, and it's no more a choice than being born Black or anything else. It's who we are. It's the way we come into the world. It's not who we choose to be. It's so important to really understand that and take care of children because it's tough. And so many children lose their lives every year because of exactly how tough it is and the absence of support and understanding.
Absolutely. And it's not losing their lives at the hands of others often. It's losing their lives under their own hands, which to me shines a light, a huge blinking spotlight on this is a problem. People do not choose to take their own life when they're just having a little identity crisis. This is years, cumulative years of living an existence that's intolerable.
Absolutely. I just wrote an op-ed for the Sports Business Journal, just really talking about this phenomenon when you are different than what's considered the majority or the norm of trying to assimilate to fit into something that is not a fit for you necessarily, rather than just having the freedom to be who you are. It is so hard to live that way. It is so hard to try to lead two different existences. And that just creates, especially when you're a kid, shame. It creates shame that can be so heavy to carry and sometimes clearly too heavy, to your point. And often the loss of life is because of children taking their own lives, sadly, because they don't feel like they belong.
That's why the B in DEI has been added. It's so important to feel that you belong. And I'm so glad that you felt like you belonged in your family. I know for me, my difference in my family was I'm the only liberal anywhere in the county where I lived, which is why now I live in Chicago. Now I'm surrounded by people who think like me, but boy, I was the Black sheep of the family, the weirdo. And why do you think like that? Nobody else does. And it's like, it's just who I am. It's not the same by any means. I'm not trying to compare my liberalness with what we're talking about, but I can feel a little bit of what it is to be different in that way.
When your positions come from you being your authentic self, it is mm-hmm. who you are, right?
And right.
Can you change it? Yes, but should you have to?
And why would you want to?
Yeah, exactly. To make other people happy. It is these differences that make the world so beautiful and interesting.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. I can only imagine the challenge of being the only gay Black female in an executive position in Major League Baseball. Why do you think it's important, or do you even think it's important for you to pave the way for other women who will come after you?
I think it's tremendously important because it shows what's possible to begin with. And more importantly, it gives people, I think, the courage to try because they can see what's possible even in the face of adversity, even in the face of challenges and barriers and difficulties, that it is, in fact, possible. That's why it was important, because I'm by nature a shy person and a bit of an introvert. And so it was important for me in that position to speak a lot on that topic and others, because it wasn't really about me. It was about, I needed to do it because, first of all, I had the platform and I had the voice to speak for those who did not, and to encourage those who wanted to do what I was doing in terms of being a woman executive in professional sports to do it. It's so important that we do that for each other. Earlier on, you did say that I was the first openly gay and Black woman. In fairness, openly gay Black woman, because there may have been other Black women back then, I don't recall, but executives. But it's so important that we do that. Somebody's got to be first. And when we're there, we not only have to act as a role model, but more importantly, we have to reach back and bring up others behind us. Otherwise, what is really the point of the exercise?
That's right. What to be that? The only one ever? No, that's not the point. It's a door opening.
Exactly.
And even if you have to kick that door open, it's still a door opening.
Exactly. And sometimes you really do. That's the only way we make progress as women, as people of color, as anyone outside of the majority and outside of the norm, whatever that is to kick those doors down and certainly walk through them when there's an opportunity to do so and stand in that space and take up the room that you've earned. That can be hard to do. It can be intimidating and it can be difficult. Certainly there were challenges, and there are a lot of challenges with being the only, because first of all, in paving the way, you're having to confront people's discomfort with you being there and all the ways that that can come out and really help them get to a place where they are at ease, as opposed to in discomfort around a woman being there, a gay person, a Black person. The only way to really do that is to show up as your authentic self. Because then people can get comfortable with you and see your humanity and see you as another person. But when we hide who we are, we only perpetuate the problem, because it almost seems to reinforce any biases that people may have. And it's like, they're not even comfortable with who they are. Why should I be? It's really important to show up as our authentic selves and stand in our power, you know, take up the space even when it's uncomfortable. And like most people, most women anyway, men may not suffer from it the same. You know, I dealt with imposter syndrome all the time.
Yeah.
All the time. When I had to just act as if until...
Make it till you make it, baby.
Until you make it, right. And just keep showing up and doing the work and not trying to change who I was and the way that I present in order to make it. Just staying in my authenticity as a woman who's a bit more quiet, but still no less powerful in my advocacy as a lawyer.
Right. And not shrinking yourself. So often women in general, and I imagine women of color even more, feel the need to shrink, to not take up any more space than necessary. I love that you say, stand in your space and take up room. You are who you are, and you don't need to apologize for it. You don't need to change yourself, and you don't need to shrink to make someone else more comfortable. I love that.
Yeah, I mean, it's key, because if we do, then we never make progress, right? We never, ever make progress.
And we don't have those hard conversations that we need to have to better understand one another. And when we do, we always find commonalities. There's things that we can like and appreciate and respect about one another. But if we don't take the time to know one another, that'll never happen. And we'll always be otherized.
Exactly. And sometimes, hopefully, it gets to the point of conversations and really spending time with each other. But at the very least, being present and having people see you and get to know you just by being around you, begin to get an understanding and get more comfort. But yes, the conversations, the interaction, the inclusion, the sense of belonging. Because at the end of the day, as I said earlier, it all comes down to humanity. At the end of the day, we're all living, breathing, feeling human beings. That's what there really is. And we create all of these other differences that in order out of fear or whatever it is, fear, discomfort, unfamiliarity, being fear of a lot of different things. But if we see each other as living, feeling, breathing human beings and start there, all entitled to the same respect and all wanting the same respect and sense of belonging and just the same courtesies and access and everything else. And there's no reason we shouldn't all have it.
That's right. You getting equal access does not diminish my access in any way.
Exactly. And that's the confusion that people have. People sometimes treat life and work and everything else as a pie. And if you get more, that means I get less. Diversity, equity, inclusion, access, opportunity, it's not a pie. There's plenty for everyone. And I am a true believer that whoever is the best person for the job or the promotion or whatever it is should get it. But everyone should have the opportunity to get it. And that's where we miss the mark.
Yeah. I'm wondering if being a college athlete taught you anything that you're able to bring into the workplace today.
It taught me everything that I bring into the workplace. I mean, there is a reason that I forget the most recent statistics that the Women's Sports Foundation have, but I think it's something like 94% of successful women executives were athletes, and most of them college athletes. It's hard to ignore that. Yes, there is so much that I learned through participation in sports that prepared me for work and for success in business, among other things. And one of the things I love most is when you're a kid playing sports on a team, sometimes you think, well, we get in our heads about who we are and our contribution to the team. And then as you grow in sports and progress in your athletic career, particularly in college, you learn that, you know what, I don't need to be the best player on the team, but I sure have to know who they are and do what I can to support them so we as a team can win. And that's what really matters. How do we as a team win? And what is my role in that? And I bring that in workplace every day. And that's one of the things that I like to think made me a successful leader over the past several years and continue to now is surrounding myself with people who are smarter than I am, that are better than I am at different things, because that's how we succeed. That's how we thrive. Going back to the parallel that I just drew in collegiate sports, certainly I bring that every day, along with the discipline, determination, willingness to take risks, willingness to take that last shot, knowing that you may not make it, but you know what? It's not the end of the world. Learn from it and get back in the game next time and take the shot again. There's so many lessons that translate so well into sports, and they always have for men. And that's why women, I think, for so long were at a disadvantage in business, who weren't athletes because they didn't understand that dynamic and perhaps hadn't experienced if they didn't get to play sports. And now 94%, you know, the playing field is definitely being leveled with women and having so many women athletes becoming successful business women, successful business leaders.
I just want to share with you a proud grandmother moment. My granddaughter this weekend just took third place in Pennsylvania State Girls Wrestling Competition.
Wow.
And she's only a sophomore. I was there. I drove to watch her in Hershey, Pennsylvania, get third place. And it was so exciting. And it was just really fun. And I know she's going to have a great wrestling career as long as she stays healthy. She has grown into such an amazing young woman that I know the discipline of wrestling is what helped her move in that direction. I just love watching that. You of all people would appreciate it.
I do. And congratulations to her and to you, because I mean, it is so fun to not only experience it, but for parents and people who love you to support you through that and just see the joy that you get from it and see how it translates into your development. So that's awesome.
Yeah. Thank you. You spent 22 years with the Arizona Diamondbacks as their legal counsel. And then after 22 years, you left to start Truth DEI Consulting. So why the change?
Yeah, you know, that's an awesome question because it was truly my dream job. there was a lot of soul searching and a lot of determination, and a few things were happening for me. And first, let me say it wasn't my first career change. Again, I'm not afraid to take risks when I need to, and this was clearly a significant risk, but a couple of things were going on for me, honestly. Obviously, this was shortly after the pandemic, and the pandemic changed things for a lot of people, myself included, because a lot happened during the pandemic, including the social justice movement. Also, a lot of burnout happened. And frankly, as much as I love my job, loved my job and loved the journey, I think I was experiencing a little burnout. And then I was also watching what was happening in the world and thinking, what am I doing to make it better? What am I doing to make this world better? What can I do? At the same time, I'd started leading the DEI efforts for the Diamondbacks. That was something I was passionate about, at which point I put myself through Cornell's DEI certification program and got my certification, because when I do things, I want to do them the right way and be sure that I have the credentials to do it. And I fell in love with the work. And I thought, okay, I love what I'm doing, but is there something I can be doing to add more value to the work? And if not now, when? So, yeah, I decided to take the leap, and I am so, so grateful for the opportunities I had working in pro sports with the Diamondbacks, with the Suns. It was the journey. It was the ride of a lifetime. It was hard to walk away from, but I really felt in my soul that it was the right time, and this is what I need to be doing now.
You just changed rides. The ride isn't over. You're just on a different ride.
I'm on another great ride. This feeds my soul in a way that is difficult to articulate for a number of reasons. One of the things Billie Jean King said to me, served on the board of the Women's Sports Foundation, which is her nonprofit, is she once sent me a note saying, thank you for giving back more than you take. I've tried to do that over the course of my life, but as an openly gay Black woman in a time of significant social unrest and a lack of social justice, how could I have seen these kids out there during the pandemic putting their lives on the line to fix problems that we created or let happen? How could I not do something? I may not be able to get out there and protest and do all of that sort of stuff, not in the ways that they can, but I built a platform over the years that I felt I could use to make a difference. Hence Truth DEI, and Truth DEI because it all starts with the truth. We don't get anywhere. We don't get to any change if we're not willing to be honest with ourselves as individuals and as organizations about who we are now, where we are now, and how we got there, and what we're willing to do to change. That's why I named it Truth DEI, but we also work using truth as a framework. The T is the truth. What is your truth? The R is reconciliation, because you have to reconcile where you are now and forgive yourself or wherever that is in order to move on. Otherwise, you're just stuck there feeling guilty, which isn't productive.
No.
The U is understanding. Get the knowledge and information that you need to do better. Whether it's training, whether it's reading books, whatever it is, get the information you need to do better. The other T is taking action. Then you have to do better. You have to do something. You have to take action as an individual, as an organization, whatever it is, or change isn't going to happen in your circle, in your workplace, whatever it is. And the H again is humanity, all the while seeing each other through the lens of humanity.
How impactful is that? I love that.
Thank you.
Would you share your vision for Truth DEI with us?
I have a short-term vision, which is I would love for Truth DEI to be, of course, a highly sought-after consulting firm for diversity, equity, and inclusion, for us to have an opportunity to be a part of transformative change in as many organizations as we can, the people who are open to change, and focusing again on the humanity aspect of it. A lot of people intellectually understand the need for DEI, but they can't, from a heart perspective, get there. And you really need to connect the two. So that's the short-term goal, is to continue to help organizations move towards transformative change through our framework. Long-term, I talk about this all the time. Long-term, my vision is that nobody needs us.
Amen.
Any other DEI. If it becomes a part of the DNA of organizations and people, the need for consulting firms like mine to help you get there, because you're there because it's just a part of who you are. And that takes work to get there. But once you get there, and once it becomes ingrained in the DNA of organizations and individuals, my dream would be that nobody needs us.
Let's cheers to that vision. I'm 100% with you on that.
Thank you.
We're almost at the end of our time, so I wonder if there's anything you might like to add that we haven't had a chance to talk about.
First of all, I want to thank you for having me.
That's my pleasure.
I absolutely love talking about diversity, equity, and inclusion. As I said, it just feeds my soul. And I'm pretty excited about a couple of recent things, and or one recent thing and one thing that's coming up. When I say recent and ongoing, and you mentioned it in my bio, and that's the launch of Truth Retreats. We just launched it in October.
In Selma and Montgomery, of all places. Holy moly. Those are important places in the history.
And it only addresses one culture, but I believe in the power of immersive training. Like I said, the goal is to get heart and mind to connect, because that's when you can get to transformative, lasting change, where you get people really connected with what other people have experienced and are experiencing because of what they've experienced in the past. And so to get people into an immersive situation like a Civil Rights Trail tour in Montgomery, in Selma, Alabama, and have them go through Equal Justice Institute's Legacy Museum and National Memorial for Peace and Justice, which are amazing, and really learn the history of African-American people from the transatlantic slave trade through mass incarceration, and then the civil rights journey that's a part of all of that as well. And then you can begin to understand the Black African-American experience. Some people who may have biases about African-Americans because it's what they've been taught, being behind because they're lazy or whatever it is, and not understanding the contributions of African-Americans to our country, and that they're still facing ongoing barriers. Just because laws have been passed doesn't mean things have changed, doesn't mean racism has ended, doesn't mean that everything is okay. Having people understand that and seeing them transform before your very eyes, as they say, I didn't know. What can we do? We need to be thinking about what we do differently. Yeah. And using their personal and professional power to implement changes and coming up with DEI strategies. So I'm, as you can hear, I'm so excited about Truth Retreats. We do them for organizations, for teams, for nonprofits, for individuals. It's just really a powerful way to get to change. I'm really excited about that. The other thing is that I am going to be publishing a book called The Truth About Us. It is a combination of the framework that I talked about and stories, and not just mine, but of other people as well, woven through it, of real life experiences, as well as strategies and tools for how to do better within the framework of truth that we work through. So I'm really excited about that as well, and look forward to that coming sometime this year.
Congratulations on that, first of all. And please shoot me a note when your book comes out. I'd love to send out a notice to my people that your book is out. It would be excellent. I would love to read it.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
If anybody listening to this podcast would like to reach out to you for further information or to have one of those experiences that you're talking about, how would they do that?
You can reach me at nona@truthdei.com, or you can also reach out to info@truthdei.com as well. And someone will get back to you, but we'd love to hear from you. Love to get more people out on the retreats. It's an amazing experience. I mean, life-changing. Obviously, we're also available to help out with DEI education and training and strategy and assessments as well. And one-on-one CEO coaching. We also do that.
All right. Terrific. I really appreciate you joining us today, Nona. I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart. It's been a great conversation.
Thank you for having me, Ken. I've enjoyed it too.
My pleasure. I hope you enjoyed today's podcast, and remember to leave a review and share with your connections on social media. I also hope you join me next week when we'll be continuing the conversation on DEIB. I'm looking forward to it. Talk with you then.
This has been another thought-provoking episode of Life Equals Choices, Choices Equal Life. To listen to past episodes, please visit our website at lifeequalschoices.com or listen wherever you download your podcast. And don't forget, remember to subscribe.